Thank you. I'm Joel Less, recovered member of Alcoholics Anonymous, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, actively living in the disciplines of steps 10, 11, and 12. I have a home group. It's the Modem to Modem group. We meet every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, to carry the message of recovery. And we have an acute emphasis on the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because that's what takes place in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what keeps our train running on two rails. The steps, how it works, all that fun stuff, that's great information. But that's to be exercised one-on-one with a sponsor. The traditions, on the other hand, are what need to take place in the meetings. And since we're in a meeting, that's what we focus on. And we adhere to them actively. Since I haven't spoken here before, I quickly qualify that I'm a real alcoholic. 21 years old, I was at the jumping off place and I jumped. I was a veterinary nurse. Part of my job was to euthanize animals that were sick and suffering, and there was no solution. And July 8th, 1998, I was that sick and suffering animal that had no solution. And I took enough phenobarbital and alcohol to kill a 400-pound man in 5 hours. And I wasn't found for 2 days. Didn't know this for quite some time. You know, I went from ICU to the Oregon State Psych Facility that One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was written about, to a treatment center. And then when I left that treatment center, they handed me some paperwork. And the paperwork said I was admitted to Salem Emergency Center on July 10th, 1998. And I knew when they made the movie of my life, because I am that grandiose, that it was going to end on July 8th, that it was going to be this big dramatic close to the film. And I saw that July 10th, and I was so staunchly atheistic all through that treatment center. Any time they brought up anything spiritual, my brain converted that to religion, and I had wanted nothing to do with it. But while I was standing outside that parking lot, I hadn't even left the hospital yet. I was in the parking lot, and I opened up that pamphlet, packet or file, and saw that right on the first page. And that was the moment where I was shifted from absolutely not to maybe, just maybe there's something out there that held me that night and said, this kid's not going to die today. And from there, lots of miraculous things happened. Unfortunately, one of them was not the willingness to come to AA and do the work. I would show up to AA meetings, especially on times where you were going to give me a medal and clap for me. But that's about all I did. I ended up in a halfway house and where we all took each other's inventory and everybody ended up loaded at one time or another, including myself. I was in that Oxford house for 20 months and I was sober for 16. Doesn't take a Einstein to do the math. But it was something I needed to do because I was not fully convinced of the three principles that allow me to sit all the way down, which is powerless, unmanageable, and insane. Because I could trust my brain. I was a very much a high achiever with very little effort, and I thought I could rely on self-knowledge, and I thought that educational experience I had was going to be enough to keep me sober the rest of my life. I didn't know I had those strange mental blank spots. I didn't know that I suffered from the insanity that stark raving sober. I will convince myself with this intense brain I have that picking up a drink does not only make sense, but it's absolutely imperative that I do. And I did. And then the phenomenon of craving struck, and I hardly drew a sober breath for 6 months and hadn't lost anything. You know, the first time I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was physically addicted to alcohol. I was dying of late stage liver disease. Everything I had worthwhile was gone. My wife was gone. My place to live was gone. The only thing I barely had was my job. And they were trying to fire me while I was in treatment. They couldn't figure out a way to legally do that, so they didn't. And so when I came back, you know, I hadn't lost anything. I wasn't physically addicted to alcohol because I was trying to control and enjoy my drinking. I found that impossible. I couldn't do both at the same time. If I was controlling it, I wasn't enjoying it. If I was enjoying it, I certainly wasn't in control. And the only thing I knew with absolute certainty is that I had no idea how to stay sober. And, you know, by going to those meetings that the treatment center forced me to do and knowing what a meeting schedule looked like and how to find one, I went to those people that talked my talk, that understood my problems, that had what I had, and they were somewhere different. You know, they had people smile when they walked into the room. They had people hug them. They had people happy to see them. That was not where I was living. And slowly but surely, I got to work in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, armed with that gift of desperation and the undeniable fact that left alone with my own thinking, I'm going to end up drunk again, and it's probably going to be pretty quick. And that was July 23rd of the year 2000. I was 23 years old, and this summer I celebrated 23 years of continuous sobriety. And for that, I'm eternally grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous and the men and women that showed me this path. And the majority of them, including my second sponsor, were very much involved in the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. My second sponsor was the Oregon delegate. While we were working together, we did go through the big book of the traditions, as I like to call it, AA Comes of Age. And I became a resource in a small mountain town I happened to live in at that time for other meetings when tradition issues would come up. So I got a lot of where rubber meets the road experience with the 12 traditions. De-challenged me to go through the founder's pamphlet and find the 10th tradition. Not an easy task when first presented with that. Took me all of 15 seconds to find it. First page. The only requirement for membership, wrong paragraph. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. We've all heard it. We hear it at a lot of meetings. And it basically lays out, you know, what our 10th tradition. And, you know, I love that we read it, but I think it's important that we listen a little slower to the real tradition, not that the quickie version that we blast through at most meetings. But it says, especially, I love how it starts. No AA group or member should ever, in such a way as implicate AA, express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous groups oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatsoever, group or member. I live in an area that is, frankly, more often than not, opposed to the traditions. There's ignorance and apathy. Don't know, don't care. And it can become very frustrating to be one of those people who will stand on the firing line and will stand up for the traditions in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've gotten my wrist slapped a couple times. Luckily, I'm real big, so that's about as far as they'll go. and then there's a little bit further down when we're talking about Dr. Bob, and in his final days and in his final talk, the way I read this, I hear the 10th tradition, and of course, I lost my highlight. But essentially, it talks about, in his last talk, he references, let's not louse this thing up with Freudian complexes and other things that don't have any real, you know, they're great for academia, but they don't do us any good in our actual AA work. And our AA work is carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, how to recover from the disease of alcoholism to the next suffering alcoholic. And, I am a medical professional. You know, I went further in my medical profession. I am a professional, and I can dismantle a lot of the things in the doctor's opinion. But it doesn't change that they're absolutely correct. Is it necessary? No. The metaphor that we have an allergy to alcohol, as laymen may interest us, whether it's soundness, is, you know, and that's the thing, is it is a metaphor. And it's a phenomenal metaphor because it lays out the idea that I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. It's not an allergy. If it was an allergy, I could take a Benadryl and drink like a normal person. It doesn't work that way. What I have is a metabolic disorder. And, you know, all of, again, this is all the academia stuff that really isn't going to help you carry the message to the next suffering alcoholic unless they happen to be a doctor and want to argue with you about that point. And if they do send in my number, I'm happy to be happy to do that, fight that fight for you. We're given three key points in the full form of the tradition: politics, religion, and alcohol reform. Now, but it also says any outside controversial issue. So you know, as the flyer said, what is that? What is included in that list? There's lots of things that could be included in that list. You know, I live in Oregon. Oregon, there's a major rivalry between two college teams, the Ducks and the Beavers. And they are adamant. You know, you are on one side of that fence or the other. I'm an Owl, by the way. I went to a tech school. I went to a college that you get a job from. But that's neither here nor there. Luckily, there's no Oregonians to take a job. But I've seen it in meetings where people get quite offensive to one another. And, you know, what if that newcomer is on one side of the fence or the other? You know, could that cause that person to leave? It's possible. You know, this is where we look at, you know, Bill likes to use the reference, the good being the enemy of the best. You know, so I consider these things. If I turn my camera around, you'd have an idea of what religion I relate to. I'm not turning my camera around. If I sat up out of this chair, you'd know what hockey team I support. I know I'm speaking in Florida, and I'm not going to sit up because it would be controversial. So, you know, again, this is one of those things where, you know, these aren't rules. These are concepts to be considered. And many, many things can be considered outside controversial issues. That's why it's imperative we stick to the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous and the topic of alcoholism and recovery from it. As we derivate from those things, we open the door to the possibility of outside controversial issues. Now, on to, you know, the big book of the traditions, AA Comes of Age. There's some just phenomenal. And if you don't have this, it's pulled directly out of the 12 and 12. So most of the other than the first paragraph I'm going to read comes straight out of the 12 and 12. It says, we think the future safety of Alcoholics Anonymous greatly depends upon tradition 10. AA's principle of no controversy at the public level. This tradition reads as follows. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Since the AA name might never be drawn into public controversy. Since Alcoholics Anonymous began, never has it been divided by a major controversial issue. Our fellowship has never taken sides publicly on any question of this embattled world. This has been no earned virtue. It could almost be said that we were born with it. For one old timer recently declared, practically never have I heard a heated religious, political, or reform argument among AA members. So long as we don't argue these matters privately, it's a cinch that we shall never argue them publicly. And that's one tool I've used repeatedly. You know, you come into the meeting, I come early, I stay late. And there's always the gab and the BS and occasionally you will hear talks of politics. And that's where, as somebody who understands the traditions and supports the traditions, it's imperative that I speak up and say, whoa, 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 looks like we're getting into some outside controversial issues here. Maybe we should change the topic. And maybe one out of 40 times that's happened, somebody says, well, the meeting hasn't started yet. That's when I pull out the 12 and 12, because most meetings, almost any meeting, you're going to find a 12 and 12. Now I'm so used to Zoom and having my full library of books that I have to carry around a tool bag full of literature to every in-person meeting I go to, because I don't know what I'm going to run up against when I get into that meeting. I don't memorize our literature. I don't want to make it the implication that I'm some spiritual giant that knows all this stuff. I want people to experience that we have more literature than simply the big book and the 12 and 12 to reference. And, you know, if we really want to grow in our understanding, and I love that you guys use the pamphlets, because I sincerely believe pamphlets are some of the greatest literature AA has ever produced that doesn't get read. And so I say, look, it says right here, you know, practically never have I heard a heated argument among AA members, so long as we don't argue these things privately. And that's us in the meeting, before the meeting, after the meeting, me and my sponsees. You know, if we're in an AA setting of any sort, I make it critically important that we don't start these conversations. I've sponsored men that have completely different political views than me, that have completely different religious views than me. And they don't know that because I don't tell them. And then I teach them, I shouldn't know that about you either. And, you know, this is how we start to learn. And that's not rare. You know, the vast majority of my education in the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous are generally when I step over the line and I had a well-intentioned, well-educated, well-informed old-timer wrap his arm around me, walk me out of the meeting and say, hey, bud, you know, there's a reason we don't do this. And, you know, it's based in such and such tradition. And you know, and they'll try and give me metaphors and examples like the allergy metaphor. It's not accurate. But it'll help me understand, you know, opening this door allows the possibility of the complete destruction of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's said right there, the future safety of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, I'm not a breeder, but, you know, most of you guys probably are. So you guys are going to be making new little alcoholics. And I want their great grandkids to be able to come in and find recovery from alcoholism as I did when I needed it at most. And I want it to be the same Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, of one degree. Like I always use the metaphor of, imagine we're in a sailing ship and we chart our course. Our course is charted for us. We've got the map, we've got the compass, and our compass is off one degree. Not a big deal if you're in a lake, but if you're crossing the Atlantic, one degree off, you know, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about 80 and 100 years down the road. It's not the alcoholic sitting in a bar tonight that next week's going to get sober. It's the alcoholic baby being born who's going to have a grandchild that's going to need this. And that's why it's critically imperative for the future safety of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because we've got the examples, and in the Washingtonian example is out of the 12 and 12 and AA Comes of Age, of how allowing politics to take up our space by getting derivated from the one critical aspect, one alcoholic sharing the message of experience, strength, and hope, and recovery from alcoholism through the 12 steps, and, you know, and having meetings that understand the 12 traditions. And the only way the meetings understand it, and meeting isn't a thing, a meeting is a concept, is that the members understand. That's why I love that it says no group or member. Because what is a group? It's a collection of members. So that's why I, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, need to understand these traditions. It's not something that the group needs to know, because I'm the group. You know, I am one small part of a great whole. And it's up to me, you know, just like in a high-rise building, you know, one support strut doesn't, you know, in the tens of thousands, doesn't seem that critical till it's broken, you know. And one of the reasons I love speaking on Tradition 10 is I get to talk about controversial things I'm not supposed to talk about. And you know what I used to hear a lot when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous was, I'm an alcoholic and a recovering Catholic. You know, outright disparaging another religion. You know, outright. And you know, do we know who the newcomer in that room is? Do we know? I've worked with alcoholic priests. I've listened to alcoholic nuns, you know, and if that's their first meeting and the person at the podium is up there disparaging the thing they've dedicated their life to, they are hearing, you're not welcome here. You know, I had to recover from your spiritual practice. You know, no matter what that happens to be, Scientology, Buddhism, Hinduism, it doesn't matter. Is we do not show support. You know, the way we keep all religions welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous is keeping the specifics of all religions out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I truly love your script where you actually mention, look in your background. You know, I've been to amazing meetings that were one of the strongest meetings in town. And we had a speaker in a situation similar to me, only there was a bookshelf behind him. And there was no denying what his political affiliation was by these big, thick books. And I had to reach out to the GSR and say, hey, man, you might want to talk to this guy about that, because it could, you know, people, these cause heated battles. These cause wars, you know, it gets into that a little bit from, it talks about a little further down, As by some deep instinct, we've known from the beginning that no matter what the provocation, we must never publicly take sides as AA. It doesn't say in AA, it says as AA. You know, I've gone to political marches, I've been in rallies, but I wasn't wearing an AA t-shirt. You know, I wasn't waving an AA flag. I wasn't representing Alcoholics Anonymous. I was representing my person and my beliefs. You know, it doesn't mean I recoil from life. It doesn't mean I don't get to stand up for what I think is right. I just don't get to do it while flying the banner of Alcoholics Anonymous. And by implication, implying Alcoholics Anonymous stands on this side of the fence or that side of the fence, because it doesn't. And, you know, my wife used to really like to buy me AA t-shirts. And I used to wear them. You know, and I don't wear them outside of the house anymore. I don't even wear them to meetings anymore because it's one of those things. My behavior is not always beautiful. You know, I've been sober for 23 years. I'm not always a great example of that. I used to have a big lifted Dodge Magnum pickup truck with truck nuts. If you know what truck, you're in Florida, you know what truck nuts are. And a big AA sticker right on the top. And you know what I did with that V8 Magnum? I drove like a lunatic. And all that time, there's a big AA sticker sitting right on the back of my window. And when it finally dawned on me, it was like, oh my God, how can I make amends for that? And I was like, well, my Hemi V8 Chrysler 300 doesn't have any AA symbols on it because I surely didn't improve my driving. I just took AA out of the equation. you know, and the next page, it says, as AAs, we do not enter into public controversy, but we know that our fellowship will perish if we do. We concede the survival and spread of Alcoholics Anonymous to be something of greater importance than any weight we could collectively throw back of any other causes. Recovery from alcoholism is life itself to us, and we wish to preserve in full strength our means of survival. You know, and this fall, as all traditions do, lead us back to the first tradition of unity. You know, we have to stick together or we will die alone. We read it at the end. You know, thank you for reading the introduction to the AA traditions, Appendix 1. You know, the traditions are to group survival, what the steps are to the individual alcoholic survival. And what we've found is without a group, alcoholics do, you know, don't survive. You can read it. It's not really thrown in your face. But if you read those early pages of the development of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they talk about the mushrooming effect, and how it mushroomed was because that you were, if you weren't in New York, Akron, or Cleveland, you didn't have a meeting. You know, you could order a book, and it was you and a book, and you and a book. Probably not going to have a great chance, but if you're desperate enough, you'll get going. And a lot of people around this country got going, and they started having the same experience Bill and Bob did. You know, one or, you know, the occasional heartening success, many failures, occasional heartening success. Then we got, that was our flying blind period. Then we got past the flying blind period and we entered the fearsome adolescent period. That's where we have a book, but we don't have the traditions. We've got a means of replicating the spiritual experience that allows the alcoholic to recover from alcoholism. We do not have a way to keep the groups from wanting to punch each other in the face. And you know, and a number of years later, 7 years later, 1946, Bill started rolling out the traditions. And just like, you know, one of my better sponsors used to say, the two things alcoholics hate more than anything else is change and things staying just like they are. Because, you know, we're consummately irritated. You know, if they stay the same, it's a problem. If they change, it's a real big problem. Just look at the preamble. You know, it happens. And so, you know, when Bill started bringing out these 12 traditions, it's like, you know, they would have to actually ask him. When they'd ask him to come speak, they'd say, you know, we want to hear your story and we want to hear about, you know, the winds blowing from the mountaintop. But, you know, leave that tradition stuff aside. We're not really all that interested in that. And thank God, we are smarter than me. And by 1950, You know, through a lot of campaigning and a tremendous amount of resistance, our traditions were adopted at the first international convention in Cleveland, Ohio. And that's what this book is all about. It's transcripts from the Kell Auditorium. And, you know, that's 1950. 73 years later, we still have Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there are certain pockets of enthusiasm that are phenomenally healthy. There are pockets of resistance that are frighteningly scary. And so today, you know, there was so much wisdom and foresight in Bill's writings that he knew he was going to pass, just as Dr. Bob had recently passed. And there would be nobody to run the ship. And that's why what it means by Alcoholics Anonymous coming of age is it's turning Alcoholics Anonymous over to the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's no longer a handful of old timers calling the shots as to what's what. And therein lies the rub. Now we are responsible. We don't get to call Daddy Bill. Daddy Bill, Daddy Bill, come save us. We're in trouble. No. But luckily, we wrote the stuff down. But it won't do you no good if you don't read it. And it won't do you no good if you don't start putting into practical application at once. Be like sitting at the carpenter's hall, talking with a bunch of other carpenters. You know how many houses are getting built by that? Absolutely none. That's what meetings are. You know, there are places that we're in the union hall talking about our work. But if we're not out there doing that work, if I don't have a sponsor taking me through the steps, if I'm not in a home group that's engaged in the business of Alcoholics Anonymous, and in my groups don't actually adhere to the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous or start doing things like, you know, what's common here is changing the wording of our literature to suit the political sensitivities of the population at large. And, you know, I used to have a thing in me where I would not leave a meeting when they would do things like that. I would sit in my chair, bite my cheek, and kind of hope to be called on and really hope not to be called on, because I am one who will stand up for the traditions. In 2016, I was struck with a profound nerve disease that has rendered me disabled, had to retire at 41 years old. Luckily, I was in a position to do that, and it's stress mediated. So I have to pick and choose my battles today. And, you know, when I see the he's and hims taken out of the traditions, when I see the, you know, God change to higher power and how it works, you know, I more often than not just have to leave. You know, I vote with my feet. I can't support nor participate in a meeting that has taken it upon themselves that their group conscience overrides the group conscience of Alcoholics Anonymous, the group conscience of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the same is true for the preamble. We used to have one preamble. We now have a different preamble. There is only one preamble. And for those who choose to continue to read the preamble, yet choose to use one that we have voted out, that the group conscience of the body of Alcoholics Anonymous has decided to vote out, and I've got to go. You know, that's not my fight to fight. It's not my hill to die on. And I have profound pain as a result of doing that. So, you know, today I'm a little more on a leash as far as what I'm willing to do. But I always, you know, I never go into these conversations. Generally, they happen after a meeting because you share X and I share X is false. And then after the meeting, I have, you know, my toolkit and I bring out the literature because they're not arguing with me. You're arguing with the literature. You're arguing with the group conscious of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you want to argue with an inanimate object, go right ahead. It's probably not going to get you anywhere, but then I don't have to personalize any of these attacks because they're not attacking me. They're attacking the literature, and it's like, you know, go right ahead. Sports teams, and politics are the ones that you know, sports teams are kind of can be minor, depending, you know, Alabama, that's a major controversy when you start talking about college football. You know, Texas, high school football will even cause controversy. And this list will continue to grow. You know, it never dawned on me the concept of a sports team being an outside controversial issue until I heard a speaker share it. And then it all came right up to the forefront of my head, the Ducks and the Beavers. And boy, they snip at each other and, you know, they try and laugh it off. But, you know, not everybody has the same sense of humor as you do. And I don't know about you, but I'm sensitive. I'm real sensitive. And, you know, if I start to feel as if I'm being attacked, I will walk away. You know, I will turn my face to the wall and die. You know, this is very obviously true. And it's spelled out very clearly. You know, what if Alcoholics Anonymous, the genesis of Alcoholics Anonymous didn't happen in a place of, you know, primarily white Protestant Christian men? Instead, it happened somewhere in the Middle East and where everybody was Muslim, you know, and they, you know, you had to be a Muslim to join Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, what would happen? You know, and that's kind of, I had a great sponsor that, you know, I was having some real difficulty with my wife, and, you know, she was an untreated Al-Anon. And she had this trump card in her pocket that she liked to throw in my face. And he said, you know, this is a great tool I've used numerous times. And it's we pause for a moment and say, imagine if our roles were reversed and I said to you what you just said to me. And it gives us that moment of pause and reflection to see how my behaviors can act. Would I want that said to me? Would that be acceptable means of conversation? Absolutely not. And the beauty of it is I've had that thrown back at me since then. And it's like, oh, wow. Yeah, it goes both ways. And so, you know, to think about these things, you know, what if this was formulated in Israel, you know, and, you know, there's a lot of people that are so dedicated to their religious practice, similar to I was so dedicated to atheism that I would rather turn my back to a wall and die than listen to you talk about God. Frankly, I didn't even sit down in my first AA meeting. You know, I was taken by the treatment center. My very first night in treatment happened to be meeting night. And they loaded us up on a bus. I knew nothing of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew nothing of the 12 steps. And we walk into this, we pull up to this big church, and I'm like, uh-oh. And we go down into the basement, and the steps and the traditions are up on the wall. And the only thing I see is God, 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 goodbye. I spun on my heels, and I walked right out the door, and I sat outside of that meeting and waited for the bus to come pick us back up. Because I'm like, if that's the answer you got the wrong guy. And luckily, I was continually directed to We Agnostics. Because that's where I was, you know, I was an agnostic. I fully believed that there was an absolute proof that there was no God. And so I wasn't hearing none of it, but I had nothing else to do in this treatment center. So, okay. I read it a few times and I started to, you know, I grew up in Las Vegas and I was always looking for the con, and I'm a bit of a con man, a bit of a criminal, a bit of a liar, ran an unlicensed pharmacy through high school, if you know what I mean. You know, so I'm always looking for the angle, and every time I explored into the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't find an angle. I couldn't see how they were trying to drive me to Christianity, is what I thought they were trying to do. And what I found was the exact opposite, as it says, we don't care, you know, well, you know, whatever God you believe in does not matter. You know, and I've heard people talk about, you know, a doorknob being their higher power, because if it wasn't for that doorknob, I wouldn't make it into this meeting. You know, the chair in the meeting is your higher power, because if I didn't have that chair, I wouldn't be able to sit through this whole meeting. Whatever tiny, you know, and granted, it says this is a beginning. You know, all we needed was some foothold to make our beginning. And for me, it was when I opened that file. I opened that file and I made my beginning because I could see the hand of God's influence in my life, the hand of something. Didn't know what it was, but I certainly know it wasn't my roommate and nobody else came into that house. And I was still alive without profound brain injury. And because, you know, by cracking the door just a little bit, as it talks about in the 12 and 12, that door just slightly open, I was able to start to see examples in my past. And I really do only see God in my life in hindsight. Now I've developed trust that God is with me. We're in regular conversations. I actively practice the 11th step. The first thing I do when I wake up, you know, on awakening, I do it. When I retire at night, I do what's suggested. As I go through the day, I practice the 10th step. When I'm upset, no matter what the cause, I got to find out what's wrong with me, because that's the only thing I can deal with. And I firmly believe that there's two secret words in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. You. The courage to change the things I can. Me. And the wisdom to know the difference. So I got to get down to causes and conditions. And luckily, I was taught that. It got tattooed in my brain in my fourth step, where I had to write column after column after column after column. And now I don't always have to do that. Recently, I did have to do that because it was with my wife. And you know, we had gotten to the point where she was actually asked to leave our home for a little while when she wasn't working. She was asked to spend her days off with her parents because she had become her untreated Al-Anon condition had exploded to a point where I wouldn't call our house a war zone, but it was a minefield. And we never knew what was going to set her off. And so, you know, today I don't play doctor in Alcoholics Anonymous, even though I'm fully capable of it. That's an outside controversial issue. We're taught to cooperate with the men of medicine and the men of religion. That's why we don't endorse any religion, nor do we disparage any religion. You know, this is what I was referring to earlier when people would say thing and introduce themselves. I'm a recovering Catholic. You know, that was just such a gut shot, because I knew that there's a lot of people in these meetings and you have no idea about, you know, you might know two or three of them intimately. You might know 10 of them casually, and the vast majority, you don't know anything about them. And so to keep on track, to keep this meeting safe, to keep Alcoholics Anonymous welcome to anyone and everyone, regardless of your belief or disbelief, we keep those specifics out. We do, in fact, share our experience with God. And personally, the reason I use the word God is simply because it's the easiest way in the English language to convey something that you and I can both realize what I'm talking about. But, it's not some bearded guy in the sky. And, you know, I don't believe in a ground goblin or, you know, a sky daddy. But I have a concept that, and that concept is none of your business. I will share it, some of the particulars and how I found and developed my understanding with that higher power, little secrets through the 12 steps. But who it is, what it is, how it is, because a good reason for that too is it changes. Because I don't put a fence around God, it can constantly change. It is ebbed and flowed, you know, depending on how actively am I participating in my steps 10 and 11? How actively am I involved in 12 step work with other alcoholics? You know, how well am I taking this gift of a spiritual experience and putting it to good use? And the best use for me is to share it. We cannot keep it unless we give it away. You know, I love that the story about the gaunt prospector, you know, cinching his belt over the last ounce of food, and he strikes gold. And he has a limitless load, provided he's willing to keep mining it and give every bit away. And today I am that. You know, I was that gaunt prospector. And today I'm wealthy beyond belief. And it has nothing to do with what's in my bank account. It has nothing to do with what's in my garage. It has nothing to do with the health and well-being of my marriage. Because those things are all out of my control. I can do my part. But they could all be taken away. A plane could crash into this beautiful home I have tomorrow. You know, the two women I live with, my wife and I adopted a mom, and she lives with us. You know, she could pass. You know, my wife could be in a car accident. When I start putting, you know, my gratitude list is a list of things, then I'm on the wrong path, because those things can all go away. And if my serenity, self-worth, happiness, contentment are all based on things, earthly things, then I'm in a very fragile state, because you never know when tragedy is going to happen. You never, you know, I live on the left. I always get my right and left confused. I live on this side, where there's a major fault line that could separate, that could absolutely devastate this coast of the country, and it could happen at any time. And, you know, then what? You know, so today, as our friend Carrie B likes to talk about, you know, my gratitude list is a reflection of what am I doing for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful to be placed in a position to represent my group at the area and district level. I'm grateful to be a man willing to have the intestinal fortitude to stand up for the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous in a population that does not want to hear it. And I know this, and they have told me it directly, and I don't care. Because it's the founding principles that keep Alcoholics Anonymous safe. And it's the reason your meeting is so sick. And it's the reason I stand out in your meeting. It's the reason I get called on when I show up to your meeting, is because I understand, first and foremost, how to recover from alcoholism through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I also understand how to be a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous by adhering to all 12 traditions. I don't cherry pick just the ones I like. I don't take the fourth tradition so I can do whatever I want. This is group autonomy. No, it's a package. The 12 traditions are a package. And that package leads us to the bookends of our foundation of unity. And to, you know, it very popular buzzword today is diversity, diversity, diversity. The core word of diversity is division. How are we different? That could spell death to the newcomer. What's critically important for me today is how are we the same? That's unity. You know, the core word of unity is unit, singular. You know, how are we the same? There, now, granted, the stories in the back of the big book are meant to expose diverse populations, but also to shine the light on how we are the same. It doesn't matter if you're Black, white, rich, poor, Muslim, you know, all of those things make no difference, because alcohol does not respect those things. It doesn't care how much money you have in the bank. I got hammered broke. You know, I didn't have problems with stealing alcohol, not a big deal. And so today, you know, another outside controversial issue, you know, medications and other topics, you know, things like that. That's why we, you know, it's so important that we cooperate with men of medicine. And how do we do that? By staying the F out of people's medical care. You know, we let their doctors be their doctors. And, you know, granted, I have profound knowledge of medicine and the inner workings of the human body. I learned a lot of stuff about alcoholism and drug addiction when I was in medical school. Not because they were overemphasized, but because I really paid attention when those things came up. And, but do I bring that to a meeting? No, you know, because it has no business in a meeting. Because, you know, the medical community that I was a part of up until a few years ago still believes the alcoholic is doomed. You know, they might have a weekend course on alcoholism. You know, they might learn it in pre-med, mind and brain development, you know, and that the you know, how alcohol acts on the brain. And but the medical fraternity as a whole has never been able to show any result, you know, less than 1%, with a margin of error of 2% plus or minus, which means zero, absolutely zero. You know, it's only an alcoholic that has a real chance of providing the method and technique of recovery from alcoholism. You know, we are uniquely qualified, and it doesn't require medical education. It doesn't require any of those. It doesn't require the ability to read. I've seen so many people that have come into Alcoholics Anonymous and learned to read through the big book. I've seen people who come into Alcoholics Anonymous that didn't ever learn how to read. You know, we're always constantly working to reach out to these communities and, you know, create things like books on tape, to provide translators, to provide anything we can. You know, the seventh tradition is so much more than rent and coffee. You know, when it's used appropriately and it's sent down the triangle, there are so many services that Alcoholics Anonymous provides to all of those in need. And I'm eternally grateful to have been educated in understanding that. You know, I'm not giving you $2 for my cup of coffee. You know, I it's more important to me than that. And so, God, it's really difficult to not drift into other traditions. but really, this is one of our absolute pillars. You know, this is the one that can ruin an alcoholic's experience with Alcoholics Anonymous in one word. You can absolutely cause an alcoholic to never come back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that alcoholic may never find recovery and die. You know, so today I understand in the hierarchy that yes, the traditions are all important, but tradition 10 is critically important at every meeting, everywhere, every time, because any meeting that's listed in a meeting schedule, whether it's virtual, in person, doesn't make any difference. You know, a lot of people sneak into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm a huge believer. As a disabled man, I don't leave my house very often. So the pandemic has provided me with an absolute explosion in my recovery, because I was no longer limited to the driving distance to show up at the meetings I wanted to be at. I could be in a meeting in Detroit at 5 and a meeting in Florida at 7, you know, and a meeting in Bend where I had the best, the healthiest opportunity when I moved to Portland from. It's this little mountain town. It's kind of like Oregon's Aspen, where I'm not heartbroken that I left the town, but leaving the fellowship there was quite difficult, because they certainly had what I wanted. And, you know, due to this illness, I was in a bad way. You know, I was 19 years sober and I was in the closet in the dark, literally in my closet in the dark, trying to figure out how to get out of this life without killing myself. You know, I wasn't, you know, planning the action, but boy, I was embracing it with both arms. You know, I would drive my car down the road and really hope an 18-wheeler would fall asleep and come in, hit me head on. You know, that's how desperate I had gotten, how much had been taken away, how small my life had gotten. And having the ability to connect with members of Alcoholics Anonymous that are truly on fire and truly in recovery, wherever they happen to be, from the comfort of my own home, has truly been extraordinary. But that doesn't change the traditions. And the beauty of it is, I think a lot more people were exposed to traditions, to workshops, and even the understanding, even at a minor level, of the concepts of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, if nobody else has, I certainly have. And for me, that's been truly a remarkable thing. And I wouldn't have been able to do this with a day's notice 5 years ago. I'd probably have to go look at what Tradition 10 was first. And, you know, when I got that message, I'm like, Tradition 10 is my favorite tradition to talk on. I get to talk about controversial stuff. Cool. Sign me up, D. And it is 3:55 on my time zone. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share. I do stick around after the meeting. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to discuss with you any of the literature I've referenced. Thank you again.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.